is it wrong to be angry? No. What is it about being angry that is wrong? How you act and how it drives you to sin, okay? It's just like our study about money. Is there something wrong with money? No, it's the love of money and how we view it and how we treat it. It's just like any other thing. If we allow it to control us in the wrong way, then it in and of itself can drive us to be sinful. So, in our first question, how many in here have ever been angry? Okay, those of you that are not putting your arms up, now that's not necessarily telling the truth. Okay? So we're going to be truthful. How many of us in this audience have been angry? We can all put up both arms. Okay. So as we make that point, it is a natural tendency. It is something that's going to happen, and how we react to it is going to be the important part. It's a natural emotion. It's just like fight or flight. When there is, when you're threatened in some way and you react to that danger, the emotions drive, the adrenaline flows up and it sparks that behavior. Anger is tied somewhat to fight or flight. You know, somebody gets in your face and starts yelling at you, the emotions start building up, your face gets red, and in my case, my ears get red. So, and you know, some of the things that we have to watch for. And in Mark 11, 15 through 18, Jesus drove away the money changers. We were talking about it not necessarily being wrong to be angry. He handled driving the money changers out of the temple in a way that was right but not sinful. Romans 1 and 18, Jehovah's wrath toward all has wrath toward all ungodliness and unrighteousness. Can we think of any other instances where Jehovah was mad with his people? Angry with his people? Golden calf. What was he ready to do at that point to all of Israel? Cut them off, kill them, and raise up another nation under Moses. Okay, Ephesians 4 and 26. The point of anger is be angry and sin not. So it's our reaction to the anger that is key. Uncontrolled anger arouses nothing good and only trouble. Key word there, what does it say in front of anger? Uncontrolled. Okay, so it causes us to act foolishly if we are uncontrollably angry. In Proverbs 12 and 16, a fool's wrath is presently known, but a prudent man covers shame. Sometimes we use the expression, he showed his hiney by how he behaved. That's just kind of a down and, you know, a simple expression of how a person behaved. You know, they behaved badly. They've shown their anger badly. In Proverbs 22 and 24 and 25, it says, make no friendship with an angry man, and with a furious man thou shalt not go, lest thou learn his ways and get a snare to thy soul. This talks about in the idea of companionships. Another passage in the Bible says, what about companionships? Evil companionships corrupt good morals. In this particular case, it's talking about don't associate with somebody that's angry because what? We say you pick up bad habits, do you not? If you associate with that person and they're likely to become angry, they're going to drive us to be along the same line. If you look back in history, and you look at individuals who intended to incite violence or incite riot, can you think of anyone that would come to mind and what happened to the people that aligned themselves with that individual? What about Adolf Hitler? He was an angry man. He aligned an entire nation to follow him into creating a world war because of his attitudes. What is our reaction when things do not go our way? Anybody got an example how we might react? Disappointment? Okay, that's true. But if it just really didn't go my way, you can see anger coming out of that. How about How do we act when somebody's driving slow in the fast lane? Have we ever blown a horn? Have we ever ridden right up on their bumper and ridden them? Was that an anger thing, that frustration thing that drove us to do that? I see heads nodding. Was that the right action, though? Okay. How do we handle incompetency? You got somebody that works for you and they just cannot get it right. It doesn't matter how many times you tell them. They just don't get it. Does it incense you? I have to fight that. Because these are grown people that should surely know how to talk to one another in a way to be able to convey ideas, and they won't talk to each other. Okay, that's some of you. You see the ears turning red. Okay, how do I handle, constant drip? Okay, the Bible has some things we can talk about. We'll talk about some passages here, but if you got a faucet in your house and it's dripping, does it bother you? Doesn't bother you? Okay, well, most of the time, if it's sitting there dripping, particularly the one in the bathroom tub, it just echoes. Drip, drip, drip. And what does the Bible talk about is compared to a constant dripping that is incensing? It talks about some type of woman, a contentious woman. In particular, it says, the passage is talking there about, it's a continual dripping. It's like a contentious woman. Okay, now I'm going to flip that around. It could be a contentious man as well. That same little expression, maybe it's a pet peeve that a spouse has, and every time it comes up, they just bring it up. And you grit your teeth and, here it goes again. Now, we learn to live with each other and love each other around some of these things, but it happens. And that application is very, very true. But that when you just hear it, it's just like chalk on your fingernails on a chalkboard or somebody with squeaky glass trying to clean it. It grates on you because you just hear it over and over and over again. It makes you come unglued. That's the idea here behind uncontrolled anger and learning how to deal with it in the right way. Does my anger make me a constant drip? Proverbs 27:15-16 is the passage in particular. And I think this can be applied. The passage applies it to a woman, and I think it's just as easily applied to a man, if not more appropriately. Proverbs 27:15-16. A continual dropping in a very rainy day and a contentious woman are alike. Whosoever hideth her, hideth the wind. The ointment, in other translations here, like oil in his right hand, which betrays itself. You just can't get a grasp on it and hold it to get it quieted down. It's just that kind of a continual dripping that's a problem. It abounds in sin. And when we're talking about anger, uncontrolled anger, it abounds in sin. In Proverbs 29:22, an angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgression. Don't most fights start with anger? If we look at stirs up strife, somebody gets in your were to get in your face and try and actually start a fight with you, it starts as a result generally of anger. Furious man abounds in transgression. When we see instances where there are riots in the street, is it people smiling and happy at each other? Or are they yelling and cursing at each other? They stirred up strife and they stirred up transgression. Proverbs 14:16-17. A wise man fears and departs from evil, but the fool rages and is confident. He is, that is, soon angry, deals foolishly, and a man of wicked devices is hated. The idea here, a wise man, we've talked about wisdom, but the fool is the one that rages. The word there tied to the fool is a rage, an anger. And it's contrary to what a wise man would do in his behavior. It's an interesting expression that was attributed to Aristotle. It says anyone can become angry. So first and foremost there, something simple and easy to do, anybody can do it, right? Okay, so anyone can become angry, but to become angry with the right person to the right degree at the right time for the right purpose in the right way is not easy. You got to get a lot of things correct for anger to work out, do you not? Now, we said there's nothing sinful in anger in and of itself. Anger handled in the right way can be useful. It can be used in a way to express a point. And some people, the only way they will react is if they hear something harshly. It may be used as a point of emphasis that's necessary to get a point across, but you're doing it for the purpose of love in doing that. This is interesting the way that Aristotle says it. There's so many things that have to go right for anger to be proper. Uncontrolled anger produces strife. Proverbs 30 and 33. Surely the churning of milk brings forth butter, and the wringing of the nose brings forth blood, so the forcing of wrath doth bring forth strife. Somebody grabs your nose and twists it, you're going to get a nosebleed sometimes. Certainly if you get punched in it hard enough. The forcing of wrath brings forth strife. If you're angry and you're going to force it to a point, if you're in a discussion with someone and you're arguing over it and you're just forcing your point, is that productive? We had our studies on the discussion about crucial conversations and how to go about handling conversations. One of those was about making the conversation safe so that everybody could contribute to it. If you're forcing your point in anger, you're being a bully. And that goes contrary to the rules of having a good, successful conversation. Yes?
That last verse in the CEV version, if you churn milk, you get butter. If you pound on your nose, you get blood. If you stay angry, you get in trouble.
Okay, that's a very simplistic way to put it. If you pound on your nose, you get blood, and if you stay angry, you get in trouble. That's very true. Proverbs 17 and 19. He that loves transgression loves strife. You see somebody that loves stirring up anger, they stir up strife. The troublemaker tends to, oftentimes be angry. Rage is when your whole temper becomes unglued, and the decibels are barely audible, and I think that's hard for me to understand because if something's barely audible, you should be able to hear. But I think the idea is you can't hear anything because you're shouting so loud. Doors regret being doors. Walls tremble with vibrations. And wingless objects learn to fly. How many of us have ever thrown something in anger? Okay. How many of us have ever punched a wall? Unfortunately, I have to say I did. And it's one of those things you have to watch for. How many of us have slammed the door a little harder when we're frustrated than when we ought to? I mean, this is very applicable all the way across the board. And it's important for us to think about it so that we focus on how we react all the time. Uncontrolled anger arouses nothing good and only trouble. Its fruits are hard to overcome. We've talked about the idea of a good reputation as something that's hard to earn, and it's so much easier to lose. In the case of, the fruits of anger, they're hard to overcome. Once you set something in motion, it's hard to grab it. If you let a word out, can you take that word back? No, it's been heard. Particularly now with the internet, if you put something on the internet, can you snatch it back? Oh, if you hit send on that email, it's gone. So that text isn't coming back to you once you've sent it. Fruits are hard to overcome in this case. In Proverbs 18 and 19, a brother offended is more unyielding than a strong city, and quarreling is like the bars of a castle. When somebody has really hurt us with anger, it's hard to turn that tide, is it not? If friendships have been broken because of some situation in anger or whatever, it takes a lot of work to bring that back around, if it ever can be. Proverbs 21:9-19, it's better to dwell in a corner of a housetop than with a brawling woman in a wide house. It's better to dwell in a wilderness than with a contentious woman and an angry woman. Again, the Bible makes this point here in the gender specific, but it's just as applicable in the other direction. But I will use the more common expression is that we often say in jest, if mama ain't happy, nobody's happy. I mean, it fits. If, you know, the lady of the house is unhappy about something, nobody in the household's going to be happy. So, Proverbs 19:19, a man of great wrath shall suffer punishment, for if you deliver him, yet thou must do it again. The idea here is that, you know, somebody that's bent on creating strife and anger, you may punish them, but you're probably going to have to punish them over and over again before they ever learn their lesson to get out of it. Hatred. What things lead to uncontrolled anger? Hatred. Proverbs 10:12, hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all sins. Backbiting. Proverbs 25:23, the north wind brings forth rain, and a backbiting tongue, angry looks. We don't enjoy having somebody go around and spread untruths about us. We don't enjoy somebody going around and misrepresenting the work that we're doing. Maybe taking credit for work that we've done in their own light. The idea of whispering fits with backbiting, but it's not necessarily that you're just saying something malicious. You're just not saying something to somebody's face. Proverbs 16:28, a dishonest man spreads strife and a whisperer separates close friends. Okay, I'm going to do the hand thing in here again. How many people have been affected by somebody whispering something about them? Okay, a lot fewer people raised their hand, but I think we could probably increase that if we thought about it. It happens. Somebody gets to talking, somebody gets to spreading a story, whether it's founded or unfounded, whether it should be spread anyhow. And some stories are just better left unsaid. But the idea here is a whisperer separates close friends. And I have certainly seen it. I've seen it in my own life. I've seen it in my children's lives. I've seen it in my wife's life. You know, we can all attest to this type thing. It's where somebody whispers something, gets a story started, and it creates problems. Proverbs 26:20-22. For the lack of wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no whisperer, quarreling ceases. As charcoal to hot embers and wood to fire, so is a quarrelsome man for kindling strife. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They go down into the inner parts of the body. How many in here like candy? I do. Okay. It's delicious. We enjoy it. I savor the taste of it. A whisperer savors the spreading of the tale just as much as an individual that has a sweet tooth. Pride leads to uncontrolled anger. Proverbs 28:25, he that is of proud heart stirs up strife. It's not mincing the words there, is it? You see somebody that is so prideful that they just can't admit it when they're wrong. And they'll dig in their heels and they'll fight to tooth and nail to try and prove they're right when they don't have a leg to stand on. Proverbs 13:10. Only by pride comes contention, but with the well-advised is wisdom. Proverbs 21:24, pride and haughty scorner is his name, who deals in proud wrath. An individual that's just prideful and just stirring up anger, he's a scorner. When individuals are too proud to admit that they're wrong, or who carry a chip on their shoulder, they will constantly have hurt feelings and be in the midst of contention and strife. You can have this in a work environment where a person is just not willing to accept ownership for a problem that they've created. And every time it's brought up, they'll go back and revisit the problem. Well, I didn't do that. That so-and-so did that. And it never gets resolved. So it's an interesting dynamic there. When pride drives us to just not take ownership and accept it and move on to do the right thing from that point forward. It's humbling. You know, I've had to fall on my sword so many times for, you know, something going wrong and, you know, a client not necessarily being happy with it, whether the client's right or not. I think used to be up here in Limestone Drug, they had an old placard that was out of a original 7-Eleven in a green and white sign on one of their posts. It talked about customer service and talked about how important it was, even though, you know, we have the proverbial idea that the customer's always right. Even they're not necessarily. But how you handle that situation determines whether they actually come back and keep coming back. It's the overall idea of customer service. What things lead to uncontrolled anger? The lips of a fool. In Proverbs 18:6, a fool's lips enter into contention, and his mouth calls for strokes. And I think in other passages, other translations there, we call, basically talking about come to blows. We use the idea that somebody doesn't know when to stop talking. You know, they start a conversation, they get into it, and they just can't get out of their own way because they can't stop talking and just dig a deeper and deeper and deeper hole. Somebody that is foolish in their behavior, I've seen it in the instance where an individual that's smaller in stature and thinks that they're being picked on goes up to the school bully and starts getting in his face. And he levels him. Who started it? Was it the bully? No. It's the one that thought he was being taken advantage of and thought he'd smart off. Being foolish with our lips leads to contention. Proverbs 20:3. It is an honor for a man to cease from strife, but every fool will be meddling. We talked about the idea of a whisperer and a backbiter. Does that not also fall in the category of meddling? Meddling in somebody else's affairs? This fits with that. It's for every fool will be meddling. The lips of a fool. If we look at how do we turn away wrath, Proverbs 15:1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. Obviously, the idea here is soft answer. Okay, if we're communicating with a spouse and the conversation begins to get heated, how do we mitigate that? Well, we try to turn it with a soft answer. Honey, I love you. Let's think about this and talk about it. You know, it's setting a safe environment for that communication to go forward and hopefully temper the conversation down, making the point that we're in this together. Let's talk through it. It also uses the idea here, someone brought out gifts. And in this particular way, not necessarily in the first passage there, to a good way, Proverbs 21:14, a gift in secret averts anger and a concealed bribe strong wrath. A concealed bribe is illegal, but it has been used as an effective tool to avert anger in some cases. You basically, you're buying your way out. And Solomon's making the point here, or the writer's making the point here, that is a technique that is used. Proverbs 25 and 21, if your enemy is hungry, give him bread to eat. If he is thirsty, give him water to drink, for he will heap burning coals on his head, and the Lord will reward you. We use the phrase, kill him with kindness, return good for evil. My aunt was, when I was very, very young, for all intents and purposes, best as I could tell, was somewhat of a bitter woman. She didn't really have a whole lot to do with the rest of the family. This is on my father's side, so I won't, because I got different aunts that different ones may know about. But anyhow, the story as it goes here, though, is that every time I would see my aunt, particularly in the grocery store, I would see her. She'd turn her cart and go the opposite direction. So as a little kid, I would run down the other aisle and come around back the other way and say hi to her and go up and hug her neck. This is the application of, you know, if someone, it's heaping coals on their head, to be able to make that point of kindness. Kill them with kindness. And I couldn't have been but between 6 and 8 when that was going on. Be slow to anger. James 1 and 19. Let every man be swift to hear and slow to speak and slow to wrath. The idea here is being controlled in how we address our anger so that it does not get out of control. It talks about ruling our spirit in Proverbs 29 and 11. A fool utters all his mind, but a wise man keeps it in till afterwards. We see someone that just can't stop talking. I made that point earlier. And this passage makes the point here, a fool utters all of his mind. It's better not to say something that you can't take back than to let it go and have to fight with it the rest of your life. Discretion. Proverbs 19 and 11. Good sense makes one slow to anger and in his glory to overlook an offense. You know, sometimes it's better to know when to pick your battle. And this last part of this passage here, in his glory to overlook an offense. First off, did that person really mean to say what they said? Was that person maybe under stress when they said it? Or did I actually hear it the right way? Because I don't hear near as well as I used to hear. Some things change, actually. You know, words don't sound like they used to. They have totally different meanings when they come across that way. Being discreet and making sure that we're careful about what we hear and how we respond and react to it is key. Conclusion, as we think through all of this as it relates to anger. In Matthew 5, 43 through 48, you have heard that it was said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be the sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes his sun rise on the evil and on the good, and sends rain on the just and on the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Okay, well, it's not really hard to love people that love us, is it? You know, we return good for good, generally. It's a lot harder to do the opposite. Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you greet only your brothers, what more are you doing than the others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You, therefore, must be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. Now, granted, we're never going to be perfect in the true sense of perfect. But we can certainly strive for that level of perfection. And when we know that someone's offended us, we treat them kindly, whether they deserve it or not. It goes to the idea of doing the right thing because it's the right thing to do. Thoughts and comments on a discussion surrounding anger, because if that clock's right, we're going to need some discussion. Brent.
Verses, verse 21, I believe, Jesus said, whosoever is angry with his brother without cause shall be in danger of judgment. So it's not part of that uncontrolled anger. Well, there are some things that I shouldn't be angry about. Some things would be all right. Anger without a cause, without, you might say, just cause.
Brent making the point in the passages in John and Matthew about being angry for a just cause. You know, there are certain times when you just, there's no reason to be angry.
Because like in Colossians 3, Paul would say, when he talked about seeking the things above, then he went on to say, put all anger, wrath, and malice. So there would be a type of anger that I should not have.
Right. Right. Yeah. Strive not with someone that's not done you any harm. Yeah. Other comments? Doug?
Mindful of Ephesians chapter 4. We are talking this year about unity. And if we have anger toward one another, we can't have unity. Verse 25 says, therefore, putting away lying, each one of you speak truth with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath or give place to the devil. But in all we've talked about tonight, it's easier said than done when the time comes. But when it comes to us as a family, it's even more important because of unity.
Right.
That's one of the things that I get out of God's word is that I may be angry with someone, but I don't let that get to me where I can't.
Where you can't have fellowship with them, where you can't work with them. That's important. Being unified with a common goal, you may not always agree with someone, but it's how you react to that. Are we always going to have exactly the same opinion on something that's a matter of judgment? That's true. Unfortunately, I think those venues where Little League sports or children's sports brings out some of the worst of this because, and for the most frivolous reasons. I mean, in the end of the day, to use Solomon's words, it's all vanity and vexation of spirit. It's just, it doesn't matter. It didn't.
So many times, it's the parents who've done all of that.
That's exactly right.
There's a way out of it. If not, you wouldn't have written the anger.
Well, we lose, the key is being, not losing our perspective on what we're doing at the time. I mean, and that's true of whether it's anger or it's true of whether it's one of the other topics that we've covered. It's a balancing act and making sure that we keep it in the right proportions and controlled. Somebody's oftentimes asked me, you know, a question, and I say, and it may be over a controversial thing. I say, I'm going to have to think about that. It's not a wrong answer. It gives us an opportunity to think it through before we say something we're going to regret, or say it in a better way to influence them for right. Any other comments?
Foibles of humanity. You know, you think about I did cut someone off. I remember going out of the arsenal one time, and I did look over my shoulder before things went like that, not good enough. And a motorcycle honked at me as I pulled up from the switch. So if someone cuts off in front of me, I need to remember they truly might, something may have been going on, and they did not see what they were doing.
Oh. And we have to be conscious of that. I mean, by no intent of your own in that particular case, did you happen to move over too shortly in front of someone, but they took it that way and they reacted to it. And it can happen in a moment's instance. You think you've looked and seen whether there's a vehicle coming, and you almost pull out in front of them. You start getting blown at because, first off, you've scared the people to death and they've reacted to it. And secondly, because you've startled yourself to thinking, man, I just about creamed that person. Happened last week. All of it, you do. You have to think about it. Appreciate your comments. Appreciate your attention tonight. Sunday morning, we will pick up with children, obey your parents.